Hey, it's David Greenwald.
And Dom's Nicola.
And this is Pretty Little Grown Men, the Podfectionists. Say, Fred, can you keep it? Taking this one to the grave. So we're back recapping another episode of Pretty Little Liars, the Perfectionists, our favorite new show.
Yes, true. This one is called Sex Lies and Alibis, directed by Elizabeth Allen Rosenbaum, who directed the pilot, written by I. Marlene King. Hannah's got a baby inside her.
No, I think she's had a... It's out.
Oh, really?
It sounds like she has a baby. It's hard to know over the phone because we got our Pretty Little Liars canon update today because Mona called Hannah. And we don't hear Hannah's voice, but we get some updates that Hannah and Caleb had a baby or are having one, who can say. And Spencer and Toby eloped.
Tobesters.
That's nice. This is still sure. Team Spaleb over here.
Team Spaleb. No updates on Ezria. Not that we want one or care for one.
Right. Oh, that's interesting. I wonder if something will come of that.
Is this all just fan service, just so you're just like, remember these characters who you loved?
Don't
you want them to like have normal lives?
I don't think it's a spoiler because it was all over Instagram that Hannah makes an appearance on this show. Right?
Well, she was visiting.
Was she just visiting the set?
She was visiting Portland.
Okay.
I don't know if she was just coming through.
Right. She may or may not show up on the show. But I think given that she is, Mona's closest friend of the liars, it would make sense that she would be the person who does end up visiting.
Yeah, it's so weird. The dynamics on the show are strange because it's like, you know, we have this mirroring of the liars with the perfectionists in that they weren't close friends or even really friends at all until this sort of focal point was murdered. And then we see Ava, Dylan, and Caitlin, you know, start to become close friends. And obviously they'll, by the end of the season or the series or whatever, they'll be close. They'll be like,
or
this.
Will they?
Yes, they will.
I mean, yeah, that's something that Dylan says in this episode is he's talking to Caitlin and he's saying, you know, we only know each other by our bios. Like we only know each other by our sort of resumes that are indicative of our perfectionism. Like I'm a great cellist and you do everything. You do track and student government and blah, blah, blah. But we don't actually know each other as people. Mm-hmm. And that felt to me like not only the show communicating the sort of fraudulence of their previous relationship organized by Nolan, which I think is, you know, you could connect that back to the Pretty Little Liars and how Allie was the thing that really brought them together. And after her death, it was when they sort of became stronger, more real friends. But at least they had like a real sort of semi-friendship, at least, you know. It was much more authentic situation than this. But so there's that connection, but I think it also speaks to the idea of like, okay, they're perfectionists, and who are they really? Are you just all this stuff you're trying to do to succeed, right? Or is there like a human being under there? And I thought this was the show sort of clumsily trying to suggest that.
Can you imagine what, like, starting Pretty Little Liars now, and where this main character dies, and the whole plot centers around whether or not this main character is dead? And then you're seeing promos of this TV show where that main character whose death is the premise of this original show is now the main character on this TV show.
Right. I mean, I guess it sort of has ruined it's ruined the spoiler quality of trying to watch that show on Netflix or whatever.
Another weird friendship dynamic is between Mona and Allison, where they do have sort of a confrontational scene in which Allison questions the nature of their relationship, and Allison asks, you know, are we frenemies? Are we friends? And Mona's just like, I don't know. I mean, Mona is also pretty manic this episode and having some real issues. She thinks that she somehow was the cause of Nolan's death.
Which is wild because she's bringing into the people into the school based on this algorithm that she wrote because she is a genius.
Yeah.
And so she's like writing like Einstein shit on the wall, basically. I mean, it's like Allie compares it to, or she makes the reference, A Beautiful Mind. Yeah. But yeah, it's like that or Good Will Hunting or one of these things where like the professor is writing, you know, just filling the chalkboard with wild equations.
Well, what doesn't make sense to me is that, okay, so if Mona is like, my algorithm, my algorithm combined with my reluctance to explain my algorithm's findings to Mrs. Hotchkiss is what led to Nolan's death. But it's like, why didn't she, like, it's what Mona doesn't explain is why when she discovered that Nolan apparently had the innate ability to push a fellow student to quote unquote snapping, why Mona reserved that knowledge from the people who would inevitably make the decision about whether or not Nola should go to the school. I mean, granted, the Hotchkisses are a legacy name at BHU, but at the same time, it's like if your algorithm revealed that Nolan is what? I don't know, a psychopath?
Dangerous.
Yeah. Like, why wouldn't you tell somebody about that? Is it was Mona like worried that her algorithm would then be viewed in a bad light? I mean, she doesn't explain why she made that decision.
My impression was that because the other Hotchkiss is already dead, and so maybe there's the issue of like not wanting to hurt the mob further. I mean the timeline is a little unclear. I took it as just that she didn't want to cross Claire Hotchkiss, you know,
right,
in a pretty straightforward way.
Yeah,
but the thing about the algorithm, this gets into the show's sort of, you know, very fantastical grasp on technology, right, and the ways in which things in the PLL verse operate a little bit differently from real life.
Yeah.
Because if she has this algorithm that can predict that this kid, this college kid, could push somebody enough to make them snap and do murders, that's like an extremely powerful predictive algorithm. That's like literally something from, you know, even, I don't know if you've ever read the Foundation novels by Isaac Asimov.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
That, so the idea of, like, I forget the name of the thing, but the idea that, like...
It's like history or like something... It's mathematics that essentially predicts what will happen.
Right, because the idea is across large groups of people, you could predict action, right? And this is just like, no, I've created an algorithm that can predict when, mm-hmm. you know, a guy can make people do murders. It's fine. It's fine. I'm Mona.
Also, if you need a fucking algorithm to explain when your students are going to snap and possibly lead to some sort of homicide, it's like maybe you should reevaluate what kind of stress you're putting these kids under.
Yeah, I mean, I just feel like it. I want to just scratch this itch a little more because I feel like it links to the crazy scene we saw of the people like in the surveillance bunker,
mm-hmm.
you know. And if she has this whole algorithm, and that speaks to like the idea of the surveillance state and trying to figure out who are these people, what are they going to do, how can we control them, you know? And so it's like Mona as like a government agent, yeah. or whatever.
That's
right?
What I think is like. So here's my early prediction of where this might be going. Is I think this BHU security system had something to do with Nolan's death, that they were fully aware of what Mona's algorithm found and were willing to push that forward in order to get rid of him, because they were also fully aware that Nolan and Taylor, still alive, although she's apparently dealing with her brother's murder on her own by herself in a cabin in the woods. We have yet to experience the ways in which she is dealing with this loss completely on her own. But anyway, that BHU, this sort of representative surveillance state is probably behind this murder somehow. That it's almost like, you know, if Pretty Little Liars is like is about who is A, and the Perfectionist is about who killed Nolan, then it's like, you know, let's you know, what do you do with a sequel? You up the ante. So
right.
It's like, it's not just one person, it's a freaking agency of people.
Right. And I feel like in the last podcast, we talked a little bit about like, this is such a crazy sort of break with the genre of the show and the ideas that we came into the, like the preconceptions we had of like what the show would be like, you know, and what Pretty Little Liars was capable of. And it feels like in this episode that there really is a lot of dissonance between this potentially like government, well-funded, crazy organization watching all these kids versus somebody like leaving notes behind a brick in a garden, right? Being like, I got what you're looking for, you know?
I know.
And the like sort of very low stakes, homemade, you know, one psycho killer kind of
right.
thing that we had in Pretty Little Liars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think, it's worth it to maybe run through the plot real quick. We're not a recap podcast.
I think it's clear at this point with this show that we're probably not going to, with PLL, we did do a lot of kind of scene by scene rundown. And I don't think we're going to do that with this show because it would drive us nuts. And also like, I'm just keeping a much looser grip on my enjoyment of the show. Like I'm just watching it and having fun and I don't want to, I want to think hard about it, but not that hard.
The show's not yet. I mean, I think it feels like the first season of Pretty Little Liars where the show is not yet like super complicated, where there's just a million bajillion things happening at once. So essentially, we begin in the immediate aftermath of Nolan's death. Ava's losing her shit. She's getting drunk in her room. You know, even though she's by herself in her room, she still pours her alcohol into a red Solo cup because, you know, that's what you do in college. Because even though you don't have to hide your alcohol consumption from any sort of authority by putting it in a Solo cup, even though that is makes it more conspicuous.
College.
Right, exactly. That's the answer. Meanwhile, Dylan and Caitlin get horny off of Nolan's death and bone their respective significant others.
There is so much sex in the first like 5 minutes of this episode that we're watching it, and I was like, is this a porn movie? Are we suddenly watching a porn movie?
Both of these conversations are so they don't ring well, because the first conversation between Dylan and his boyfriend Andrew, I believe his name is Andrew, essentially it's Dylan wakes up because he's having a nightmare, and Andrew says, is it a nightmare again? It's been 3 days since Dylan witnessed one of his close friends, who he also had a secret affair with, basically strung up on the fucking poles of the fence outside of this building. So he witnessed this person dead, just hanging there, this person he knew well, this corpse. Like, fuck yeah, he's going to be having post-traumatic stress dreams.
Right, the boyfriend's like, all right, let's get with the program here. Time to get back to normal, weirdo.
It's like, here, let me, it's been 3 days since your friend got murdered. You know what will help with that? Doing it. Let's do it. Dylan's like, sure, there's nothing that makes me hornier than, you know, screaming nightmares. Followed by a scene in which essentially the same dynamic happens, where Caitlin's boyfriend, I don't remember, this Eddie Redmayne looking motherfucker.
Right. We need to come up with nicknames for these secondary characters whose names we're never going to learn.
Yeah, whatever.
So Eddie Redmayne.
He's basically trying to force feed Caitlin tater tots, and then and then it's like, you know what'll get your mind off of murder is boning me in this car. Also, they decide to get down in their seats when they think cops are coming. It's like, you were eating fucking tater tots. What are you guys hiding?
That's illegal.
Because they're not supposed to be by the river, I guess.
You can't eat tater tots. It's in Portland city limits. You can't eat tater tots. Come on.
Well, but that maybe that also emphasizes this really strange situation that I just don't get, which is the Nolan's death was ruled as a homicide, yet there are no cops on campus. The only law enforcement official is this new character, whose name I've already forgotten.
Yeah, we'll get there, folks. We'll get there by next episode.
I remember she's basically like the new Tanner.
Right. She's very much like a carbon copy in look and demeanor and tone to the Tanner character in Pretty Little Liars. And it's interesting the way this show is like, let's give you familiar things that you like that worked before on this show.
Mm-hmm.
And that is certainly one of them.
Let's see.
But yeah, extremely weird that there are no cops whatsoever.
Dana
and everyone's
Booker.
Just like, yeah, we're just, no one's getting interviewed. It's been 3 days. Everything's totally chill. We're just going to let this murder ride, yeah. You know, until somebody decides it's a murder. And then I don't think any cops are going to show up in the next, in the other seasons or other episodes. I think it's just going to be,
it's well, it's ridiculous. You have this person, Dana Booker, who is a former FBI agent.
Who was on the Ava case.
Who was on the Ava case because Ava's dad absconded.
So this got me interested because throughout the episode, Ava does not want to deal with the other two who are super panicky and maybe one of them is the killer. Who knows? But they're like, we got to stick together. We got to have alibis, this whole situation. And Ava's like, I don't care about any of this shit. I'm super sad that my boyfriend died. Yeah. What is even going on? So I really appreciated that dynamic and the way that bringing in this character totally ridiculously as this FBI agent who was just investigating her like 5 minutes ago, who was like, oh, I'm just head of security at your school now. That's fine. Yeah. And now Ava's like, oh, I guess I got to stick it out with these guys.
I'm conveniently head of security at this school. Also, I now have full jurisdiction over investigating all of your lives, and I can invade your privacy on a continuous and unmitigated basis. And don't worry, no other cops are going to show up, so I'm just going to play the part of the cop. She meets Allison in the lunchroom, which we visited on set. We saw the lunchroom empty. It's a very nice looking lunchroom. She meets Allison by essentially just like looking at Allison's friggin' tablet. And she's like, you have beautiful children. And Allison isn't like, holy shit, lady, who the fuck are you? Fuck off. You're not a cop. Fuck you. Allison's like, yeah, you know, those are my kids. And, you know, I'm going to entertain this conversation. Even though there's obvious tension between us, and like it all builds towards, you know, the Allison's final line in the episode, which is, you know, what she said, like, bring it, bitch. Essentially just like, there's now going to be this rivalry between Allison and the head of security at BHU.
So this whole situation is kind of clumsy to me. And I think, you know, you can see the way the show is sort of trying to bring the PLL verse into this new storyline. And, you know, personally, I'm significantly more interested in what Mona and Ali are doing. Yes. And the ways in which they are evolving or not evolving, which I think is addressed really head on in this episode, mm-hmm. which is great.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Ali forces Mona to realize, like, oh, I'm kind of spiraling into, you know, getting into the rabbit hole. And likewise, Claire Hotchkiss makes Ali realize, like, you have to be true to yourself. You know, that's how you can help these kids, is you're a survivor. And Ali takes that as like, let me implicate myself in crimes by protecting these kids who I know may have done murder.
This is possibly the most mind-boggling character development in this new spinoff, which is that Allie's been at this school for a week at most.
Right.
Already she's implicated very deeply in a murder investigation. On top of which, two people have insanely invaded her privacy. One being Dana Booker and basically just like looking through her shit while she's standing right there. And then Claire Hotchkiss just shows up at her house.
Right.
And she's drinking on the couch in the dark. Surprises Ali, and Ali's just like, oh, okay, I'm gonna go with this. Like, I'm just gonna just be, I'm, you know, I've had a, I've I've had a lot of people show up in the dark at my house throughout the course of my life, so I'm gonna go with this. Like, why isn't? I mean, besides the fact that the show is attempting to set up this character of Allison De Laurentiis as someone who, like, again, as we've talked about so many times, is trapped in these cycles of trauma, and so she's just essentially reliving her traumatic experiences over and over and can't let go of them, and is practically inviting these things. I mean, I don't know. Any other normal person would have been like, fuck this. I spent my whole teens and early 20s dealing with the shadiness and murder of my hometown, and I just moved across the country to basically just, like, get involved in this whole new crazy business within a week of me being here.
Right. She has no reason to stay in this situation. Like,
she's a fucking TA.
Right. She should be, which is wild too, because that's not what a TA is. She should be like, TA is in grad school.
Someone brought up that BHU is, through her TA, is sponsoring her, her master's thesis or something.
But we haven't, I thought she was just coming as a teacher. There's no indication that she's going back to school.
Also, you don't need who cares? Like, you can get your master, you can finish your fucking master's thesis at any other well-endowed institution across the United States. You don't need to be involved in the one institution that drags you yet again into a very life-threatening murder mystery.
Right. But yeah, I didn't even realize, like, they kept saying TA, and I was like, that's confusing, because she's obviously here to teach, and they've made no indication whatsoever that she's, like, going to actually take a class or work on something or be a grad student. And so that, to me, is messy. And, you know, again, like, I'm just trying to keep a loose grip on the handlebars of watching this show, because so much of it, and I think, you know, it's going to take a few episodes to settle in, but so much of it has just been like, this is kind of wild. None of this makes a whole lot of sense. It's fun. I'm enjoying it. That's fine. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to worry too much about it. But it is like, if you were just coming into the show and, you know, I mean, in a way, watching all of PLL, I think, lowered our expectations, or like lowered what I let's say, charitably altered my expectations for not wanting to inspect the plot too critically, and just kind of enjoy it for what it's trying to, you know, be enjoyable at. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think we do need to see the show settle in for a little bit. But right now, it's just like, why? There's no reason for Allie to be doing any of this. I would have peaced out. I mean, the minute she saw Mona, I would be like, no, we're not doing this. I'm getting that. I'm like flying 3,000 miles from here.
Yeah, what the fuck?
You know?
You're not even my friend.
I mean, the scene
where you murdered my goddamn sister.
Yeah, again, which the show is not going to deal with at all, obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, the scene where Allie is like trying to help out Mona and brings in Pi, and she says, "Oh, you know, did you do this murder?"
And Mona's like, "How could you possibly question?" Yeah, it's because you murdered my fucking sister.
Yeah,
how's that?
What kind of person do you think I am? Says Mona, the person who literally murdered Allie's sister. Like, I mean, it's fine. You know, I love this. I love Allie and Mona doing scenes together, and the fact that, like, there's going to be a whole season of them doing scenes together is like, yeah, that's worth my attention. I'm enjoying that. I don't need it to be any more interesting than that, honestly.
Well, see, I think that brings up sort of this maybe why the show, like, why we're intrigued by the show, but what feels so odd is, like, this isn't a spinoff. This is a sequel that is basically divided between two modes. One is the Pretty Little Liars verse just continued with Allison and Mona and checking in with our best friend Hannah and our best friend Caleb and our good buddies Spencer and Toby. And I'm sure that we'll find out more about our best friends Arya and Ezra, who we love so much, and our really good friend Emily, and our good friends Emily and Allison's kids. And we're going to find out about all of these people. And then the other half of the show are these three characters who we don't really have a good reason to give a shit about right now.
Well, and maybe they are murderers, you know?
Who also, I mean, are maybe murderers.
That's the thing about Pretty Little Liars is, like, we don't think you know, in the initial episodes, we're very sympathetic to these characters, right? Like, their friend is dead. They're being threatened. This seems like a pretty wild situation, mm-hmm. as opposed to this show where it's like, you know, this episode kind of heavily implies that two of the characters seem pretty guilty. You know, they don't seem like they're not grieving. They seem completely like, we need to cover our trail, mm-hmm. because we were talking about doing murder.
Yeah, I know. I mean,
I will say all the characters in the show are on edge, Allison included, because she gets this text that was delayed by a phone service outage. And so she's like, oh, this means I could be implicated in this crime. So let me do crazy things as opposed to like getting the hell out of Dodge.
Yeah, well, I just like, see, that's just, I mean, it makes sense that Allison would go against better judgment and, you know, implicate herself even further.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, that actually, thinking about it that way, like getting back to her roots, right? This is the kind of dumb bullshit that Allison would do.
Yeah.
That she historically did, like lie to the cops and come up with this whole wild story and not actually help herself move forward, you know, by mm-hmm. reaching out to the right people or being honest or blah, blah, blah.
We were introduced to Nolan's childhood friend, Mason.
Yes.
Who shows up at the funeral, apparently used to date Caitlin. And they have a conversation while Dylan goes and attempts to look for Nolan's so-called stash, which Ava tells Dylan and Caitlin is she knows where Nolan hid his weed, which, I mean, to be perfectly honest, like, he's a fucking rich kid. Like, he was doing... And any rich kid would be doing so much more loads of drugs than weed. I really find it hard to believe that a super rich kid like that would feel the need to hide his weed stash. Regardless, especially in Oregon where it's legal.
Perfectionists.
Also, it's Oregon. It's legal here. You don't need to hide it. But Dylan goes and looks in this place where the stash is. Finds a note that says that someone was already there, and so they feel that like they're onto them. Meanwhile, Caitlin is having this conversation with Mason, and Mason says, "You know, I will do anything for you, including I will give you an alibi if you need one." And Caitlin's like, "Well, why would I need an alibi? That's a weird thing to say." And he's like, "Well, we all need alibis right now," which is still like that doesn't explain the weird thing he just said. Like, no, you don't all need alibis.
Yeah, how do they all need alibis? Weren't they, like, at home in their dorms, like, doing homework? Like, I mean, I guess it's welcome week or whatever, and so no one has class yet. Well, even though that was all very confusing because we've already seen everyone have class in the first episode. Everyone goes to class, and then Dylan's boyfriend is like, we have, like, one more day of no more class. And it's like, wait, how is even going on?
Well, they probably canceled classes.
Because of the murder.
Because of Nolan's murder.
Good call.
But also, the funny thing is that it's like, you know, in Pretty Little Liars, it made sense that everyone had a reason to kill Allison because we were shown all the ways that she was shitty to everybody. But with Nolan, we were only shown the ways that he was shitty to three people, the main characters. As far as everyone else was concerned, this was a very popular kid who was murdered. I mean, we see this like candlelight vigil and everyone's fucking crying. And who the fuck are these people? They don't know who this guy is. So the show doesn't in any way establish that people would need alibis regarding his murder, because the only reason you would need an alibi is if you had a reason to want him dead. And as far as we're concerned, there are only three people on the show who want him dead. You know, so
right. I think Allie's paranoia is interesting because it's revealing about her as a character and her past trauma and her poor decision making, blah blah blah. So that I think works for me a little bit more so than this guy showing up and being like, "Yeah, I mean, any of us could have done murder. Who can say? We all need alibis. It's fine, whatever." But yeah, I don't know.
We all need alibis, but I'll give you my alibi, even though I don't really have an alibi, because we all need alibis.
Right. Yeah. The whole setup of these first two episodes is super confusing and awkward.
And it's not its own show. That's right. I think that's the problem, is it's not its own show. It is, you can't watch the show unless you've watched Pretty Little Liars. It would be extremely, probably pretty confusing, but also not fulfilling, because it's just like, not only does the show start assuming that you've seen all of Pretty Little Liars, but it is so in the vein and flow of Pretty Little Liars where it ended. It's just like the feeling of it is of a continuation. It feels part of Pretty Little Liars. It doesn't feel like its own show. And maybe that's a problem. Maybe that's why we feel the way that we do, why it's hard to buy into this, is because it doesn't feel like its own show. We want to embrace these new characters as the center of this new sort of like self-contained story, and we just can't.
But we haven't been shown that the characters are heroic, really. I mean, we haven't been shown that they're the protagonists. They're the main characters, but we don't know that they're not the villains. I mean, if anything, like right now, Allie is the hero of the show.
Right.
And these other characters, and maybe Ava in this episode kind of becomes like a sympathetic character.
Mm-hmm.
But the other two, you know, Dylan, this is not a sympathetic character really at all. Like, this is a guy who fooled around on his boyfriend and then maybe killed this guy.
Yeah.
You know, it's like he's not the sympathetic quality of him is him saying, is all expositional. It's all him saying, you know, well, you know, I'm from this small town and I was an out gay person and I had a bad time, you mm-hmm. know, which is, I'm sure is true, right? Like yeah. that's an authentic thing for the show to do, but it's like, okay, but that doesn't speak to your qualities as a person. You know, it speaks to something that happened to you because of your identity.
And then Caitlin's, her response is, well, I feel like I should feel bad about Nolan being dead, but I don't. I feel relieved.
Right. And her boyfriend is like, yeah, that sounds good.
And he's like, yeah. And so then Eddie remains like, well, you know, that's okay to admit it. It's okay to admit it to me. Now let's have sex, because I know that Nolan being dead makes you horny.
Well, also the whole setup of her being like, I feel like this whole last year of my life has been a lie. You and me have been just sneaking around. And it's like, you're in college. Like, some dude is going to sign up to be like, you have this weird fake boyfriend situation, but you want to date me? Like, yeah, that sounds great. Let's do that sophomore year of college. Like, is that something that, I don't know, it just doesn't seem like something that you would, you know. I think back to my college days, and I don't know if I would have gone for that.
No, especially if you look like Eddie Redmayne, and you're just like, I'm probably a very rich person with an extremely sexy accent. I could...
Yeah, foreign exchange student. You know.
I could fuck around as much as I want to, but no, I'm going to put everything on the line for this girl who's pretending to be a rich kid's girlfriend.
Right.
In some sort of odd blackmail scenario.
Right. What a catch. Yeah, this is where I want to hitch my wagon. Yeah, there's a lot going on in the show, and I think the characters are... It's interesting because we have these characters of Mona and Allie, who obviously are these extremely fully formed characters, right? We know everything there is to know about them. And we have these new characters where it's like they're mysterious and have a lot going on, but they're not actually that interesting yet. Like, we haven't really the show needs to do a better job. This will happen with time, but right now, like, because we've had to divide our time between the sort of PLL carryover stuff and these new characters, you know, we really don't care that much about these characters yet.
No, it's true. I think that might be the main problem with the series so far, is loving to see Mona and Allison together. Great. But as far as these new characters go, I just don't give a shit about them.
Right. It's like every scene with them is like, cool, let's see what Mona's doing.
Well, because also because they just kind of seem like assholes. And I don't know, maybe New World and just biased against privileged kids in general. And I'm not convinced that working hard is a reason to give a shit about somebody. But I also think that, like, there's just no, like, there's nothing interesting about these kids besides the fact that they're attractive and smart, I guess. But, like, so are the liars. But the liars were so infinitely more compelling as characters.
Right. And you know, I like I said, I'm enjoying the show. It's right now I feel like it's very silly.
Yeah.
And it's doing lots of things that viscerally I like to see Pretty Little Liars doing. But it already in this episode seems like it's just become such a sort of, you know, spinning out a little bit as far as like all these ideas are from the characters' perspectives, all the ideas you have are bad and silly. Right? Like we've seen this all before. None of these things are going to work out well for you.
I'm
curious with the show. You know, we got another, you know, I think 11 episodes. So I am curious to see, like, how is the show going to deal with this? How's it going to deal with this cabin in the woods? Like, all the sort of periphery, you know, the myth-building stuff of the show.
There's 10 episodes this season.
Okay. Well, all the myth-building stuff of the show is already, like, significantly more interesting than these kids who are very much like, well, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Who cares?
Yeah. Yeah, Allison has a call. She calls up, BHU admin or something, and I guess tries to get some information on who might have wallpapered over their watching message scrawled on her wall behind all that wallpaper. And not only is she flummoxed and can't seem to get any sort of answer out of the BHU administration regarding who possibly did that work on her house where Taylor used to live. But then she's like, I guess I'm not going to get any answers out of you, so I'm just going to request some sort of repairs to come over. And it's just like, that's just another situation in which Allison should be, like, there should be red flags raising up. The fact that, like, all this stuff is happening that she is now an essential part of, on top of which she's not getting any sort of clear answers from administration who are irrevocably entangled with this weird surveillance system that she doesn't even really understand the extent of. It's like, for fuck's sake, get the fuck out of there.
Yeah, and this is end the show. Just get it. Just go. Just go. I mean, there's so
go many... home to your fucking children.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's like you literally have toddlers in your house and you're going to protect these. You're going to like give an alibi to these kids. Like you're a mom. Like that shit's irresponsible. I mean, seriously.
No, is it
like
really?
if you're a parent, like you would not be doing dumb bullshit like that because you're not 22 anymore and you got to like take care of other people, you know? But you know what? Maybe this is why Emily dumped her.
Well, it's true. I mean, we are given the impression that Emily was not happy with Allison's inability to let the past go, or something along those lines. How come no one's like questioning it? Like, why isn't Dana Booker? She's freaking nosy as shit. Why isn't she saying like, "You have beautiful children. Why aren't you there with them right now?
Why didn't they come with you and live in your student housing?"
Yeah, you have a pretty beautiful student housing situation going on.
Yeah, what is Emily doing back in wherever?
Yeah, like, what is she doing?
Is she going to work? She's doing the single mom thing.
Are you paying alimony? Are you sending money home?
Yes. It's very messy, Dom.
Also, like, how come? It's just so weird that there's this like dynamic between Mona and Hannah. And Mona's only finding out about all this stuff with the liars for the first time, while you would assume that Allie would know all of that stuff. And I understand that like they set up this dynamic where Allison and Mona aren't really friends. And I'm assuming they'll become better friends unless, you know, some other plot development occurs. But it's just weird. I'm always made uncomfortable by narrative situations in TV shows or movies where characters have very vital information about other characters.
Yes.
And they just like very conveniently never bring up this information.
Oh my God. It was like one of my least favorite parts of Lost, where someone would discover something. And as soon as that happens, you're like, you need to go tell other people immediately. Why are you not doing this?
Yeah. It's just like Allison and Mona have assumedly had plenty of other interactions outside of the brief 15 minutes that we've seen in these two episodes. And during that time at all, Mona hasn't said, "Hey, how are, you know, how's Emily doing? Or, hey, how's Spencer and Arya doing? And Allison would have just been like, oh, hey, you know, well, Spencer and Toby got eloped, or Hannah and Caleb have a baby and they're
living in
New York or whatever.
I think for the purposes of this episode, they were trying to show that Mona was taking what Allie said to heart, that she needs to not go down the rabbit hole and she needs to have actual human connections.
True.
Because you can see as soon as she, you know, she picks up the phone and she brightens up and she sort of puts on this very performative, like, happy voice. Mm-hmm. Like, no, nothing's wrong. I just wanted to call you. How are you doing? You know.
But see, that's the thing is, like, you know, and granted, I don't know. Maybe I'm really, really picking at scabs here. But you can have a conversation between Mona and Hannah where you don't need to, like, just, like, shat exposition all over the place. Like, you don't have to just have Mona be like, oh, really? You and Caleb are having a baby? And what? Spencer and Toby got eloped.
Right.
What?
Right.
Wow, that's crazy. Like, you can just have a normal conversation between friends to establish that they're still connected.
Right. Yeah, it was fan service-y for sure.
Which I know people give a shit because obviously they give a shit, but I just don't fucking give a shit because this is not information about these characters that in any way enriches the opinion that I've had about these characters for the past 2 years since show ended.
Just think of it as J.K. Rowling, like, telling you, you know, about Dumbledore's old sex life.
Yeah.
It's fine. It's just, you know, it's just the canon.
Listen, if Spencer and Toby getting eloped or Hannah and Caleb having a baby was anywhere as interesting as wizards shitting their pants and disapparating their shit from their pants.
Magicking it away.
Then I gladly will welcome it. But unfortunately, it's not. It is just, it's that like kind of like mundane plot development that I feel is so mundane that you can excise it and make the show more realistic, make it more believable, and just have people have normal conversations. It's the same way where it's like, I'm trying to think of a similar situation where it's like this is such a part of their lives that they shouldn't be having these conversations now. They should have had these conversations like years ago kind of thing where it's like the only reason they're having this conversation is to service the audience. And to me, that just feels like I don't know. I don't want to accuse anybody of anything, especially Marlene, but it feels like lazy writing to me where it's just like you can tell the audience what's going on without literally telling the audience what's going on.
Right, right. No, it's, you know, very much let's give the fans a little something.
Listen, the fans don't need shit.
Rude. This is, you know, so we never edit this podcast. This is just like now. This is just usually a straight up, like, you know, we're just doing our thing. And we're going to talk for an hour.
That's how pros do it.
That's how we do it here on Pretty Little Grown Men. but I've had a cold for forever and just coughed. And so I edited out the cough hopped back in to give a witty rejoinder.
Dave, you were so flabbergasted by my comment that fans don't deserve anything.
It just came right. My body was just rejecting it.
But I honestly, like, I don't know. I mean, I feel like we've been given so much. And the show has been so bent around giving fans exactly what they want that I don't know. Like we've had 7+ years of this. I think it's time to start telling the fans what they should have. Like if anything, maybe this is hoping too much, but I do feel like the status of the PLL verse is such that Marlene and everyone involved could be making anything that they want. They could be doing anything. And that's why I don't want the same stuff. Like, the people making the show are good and they're smart. And so surprise us. I don't know, us a little bit.
This was the, right, and this was kind of the critique that was made. It was a great Paste magazine article by your writer or a Paste writer. About the show.
Alexis Gunderson, who will be on our show. She's agreed to be on our show. We just have to plan it out.
Excellent. Yeah, I mean, she basically wrote this great piece saying, like, listen, the people who make the show are extremely good at all these things, and yet, you know, the show wants to try to have it both ways, where it's this very smart show that speaks to social issues, but is also just, like, sort of like a sexy teenage murder good time, mm-hmm. you know? And that was kind of the issue with Pretty Little Liars across the show, where, you know, I think it started in, like, a very serious and very, like, real horror movie kind of way mm-hmm. and dealt really well with social issues and with, you know, Emily being a lesbian and so on, building from that. But, of course, in the later seasons, like, undercut the time jump and having the characters grow up and be more mature and make better decisions by just, like, having everyone revert back to their high school selves and date all the same people and just completely, like, you know, pouring cold water on the entire work of the show and the writers, creating, you know, more interesting, more evolved versions of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
And this show feels like it just wants to be sexy fun, and it doesn't necessarily want to have a larger social message. I mean, again, it's early. We'll see how we feel in episode 5, but, you know, this is certainly, like, I can't invest in it in a narrative way in the way I did with PLL, because the silliness is already just right there.
Well, that's why I also, I mean, that's why, yeah. That's why I feel like this is just like season 8 of Pretty Little Liars.
Right.
Which it might as well be. It doesn't have to be a spinoff. I mean, I'm trying to think of other shows that basically, like, introduced a whole set of new characters.
I never watched Angel, the Buffy show.
Yeah, or these are spinoffs. So Angel's a spinoff, like Better Call Saul, which is an extremely good show. I know plenty of people who would say it's better than Breaking Bad. I think it's a great show, but it's its own show. I'm trying to think of TV shows that in a later season, like, really switched gears and became somewhat different shows based around different characters.
You have shows like The X-Files, where Mulder left.
Yes, The X-Files is a perfect example.
Yes.
Where you basically have Mulder and Scully. Scully becomes a side character. Mulder's gone. And you have Agent Doggett and Reyes become the main characters. So it's like a new X-Files. And you have to become invested in these new characters. And Scully is just kind of like, she's barely in a lot of the episodes. And the show understandably received a lot of criticism for that. But it became, in many ways, it's like a different show. But it's still the same show, and it's still part of the X-Files. And I just feel like, I don't know, it's like, the spinoff, it doesn't feel like a spinoff, because it doesn't feel like its own thing yet. And I wish that it would be its own thing.
Well, and especially because it's just putting these new characters through sort of standard PLL tropes of, like, here's this threatening message, like, written by hand as if it was some other teenager who's your age, or, you know, some other person who's your age, like, doing this this thing, even though we know there's, like, this vast government conspiracy, which is also confusing because, or, you know, vast somebody conspiracy, which is also confusing because Mona is, like, sitting there writing out these things in her room and putting all the stuff up on her walls, and it's like, can't she call the security people to be like, can you use your vast wealth to solve this problem? You know, I mean, it's like, I guess she does feel real genuine guilt, but then at the same time, it's like, you're supposed to be acting as part of this elite large group. Why would you not go down into the bunker and, like, be working with them on it? Like, why are you sitting in your room?
Right.
You know? So there's a lot of sort of unanswered questions in not just the, like, whatever the central mystery of, like, who killed this guy, but in just, like, why are any of these characters doing anything?
Mm-hmm.
You know, right now, all of it is, like, weird and unmotivated and, like, sort of unjustified character behavior. And I'm just watching it to see, like, what Allie and Mona do.
Well, that's the frustrating part, is the only people who actually have any motivation are the three perfectionists, because they have reasons for wanting Nolan dead. The people who are unmotivated are Mona and Allie. Like, why are they? The only way to find motivation in Mona and Allie is to is to be completely invested in the motivations and character arcs that they gained through Pretty Little Liars. You assume that Allie is motivated by the trauma that she experienced, coupled with this like need that she has to sort of rectify the wrongs that she's done in the past, as well as her like unique perspective as a person, as a traumatized person, as a so-called survivor, as they keep referring to her as.
Well, and one dynamic that I think is going to be interesting about the show in a very small way is her relationship with Claire Hotchkiss, mm-hmm. who I think is like pretty obviously lying to her in this episode, where she's like, yeah, my daughter became paranoid and like basically, you know, lost it, you mm-hmm. know? And we know that her daughter is like in the woods. I mean, we already know that she didn't lose it, that she's out in the woods, like trying to, you know, do whatever. But just the way, I mean, it's a great piece of acting, that she like pretty clearly is lying to Allison, even though she's been sitting there drinking and grieving, that she's still able to put together this story mm-hmm. that Allie seems to fall for. But I think their relationship is interesting because she obviously views Allie as maybe like a substitute daughter mm-hmm. and Allie is searching for a mother figure.
Yeah.
So she's willing to sort of listen to this person and take her advice to be herself, even though this person is like a supervillain character already.
And meanwhile, Mona, who we learned, you know, lost Mary Drake and Spencer's twin. You know, the only reason that Mona is doing what she's doing is because Mona is a extremely smart person who needs a way to use her skills. And if she's not developing some ridiculously elaborate algorithm for some elite school's recruitment process, she is going to be using that same algorithm to determine who murdered whom. And so it's like the characters who we care about, their motivations are rooted in this other TV show and not in any way really explained or explicated within the context of this new show. So therefore, the show doesn't feel like a spinoff. It just feels like a new season of this previous show, exemplified by the fact that the show is called Pretty Little Liars: The Perfectionists.
Right. Right. No, it's like it is.
And it uses a bad remix of the original good theme song.
Yeah, I love the old theme song.
Yeah,
this new one is. I can't say that this new version is an improvement.
You're very charitable.
Well, we're being charitable tonight. It's episode two.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We got
a lot more podcasting to do.
I
enjoy this episode.
Into critical mode already.
Well, I mean, there was, you know, for me there was a lot to like in this episode, but it does have these sort of glaring like objective issues already in terms of like motivation and characterization, and you know. That's fine. But I think if you were watching the show, certainly with no PLL background, it's unwatchable because you have mm-hmm. no idea what's going on, even though it's like a well-acted, stylish show. And if you are a PLL fan, you are probably asking a lot of the same questions we are of like, what is even going on? What do they want to say about Allie? Like, this is how you show you're a survivor, by like getting yourself in legal trouble so you can go to jail forever? Like, come on, girl.
Yeah.
I just want to see these characters make good decisions, which is why, seriously, like season five, the time jump, the first half of the time jump season of PLL was so good because you have these characters being
finally making great decisions.
Yeah, making good decisions and directly addressing like, we're not in high school anymore. We don't have to do this. We can be better than this. And
we literally are survivors.
Right. And the way the show did that and combined it with like flashbacks of their trauma and having them grapple with it was just like really amazing TV making. And so we know that this new show is capable of that. And right now it's like, I don't know if we're going to get there.
Well, I mean, and also it's just like, I love Mona and I love Allie to a certain extent, but I don't know. I was made sad by just watching Mona like deal with her mental illness in a way that felt so, I don't know, just felt sad and destructive. Just like watching her devolve and Allie's like trying to reason with her and she's not very communicative and kind of stuck in her own world. Not like sad as in like, oh, I wish Mona would snap out of it, or I don't want any drama in this TV show, but sad and just like, we've come this far and this character's, and like no one has helped this character. This character is still dealing with the same issues and problems that caused her to murder people in the previous show.
Right. I mean, like, she's very much a tragic character who does need help. Yeah. And the show, you know, I feel like really does walk the line of like, well, how much of this is mental illness versus her putting on an act or whatever. And I think it's trying to communicate in this season, like, no, it is mental illness. It is, this is how she is. And this isn't like, she isn't putting on an act inside her own room. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like this is really her situation. And obviously like she wasn't imprisoning two people in France mm-hmm. for however long that went on. Like that wasn't for, you know, that wasn't a healthy person's experience. So I don't know what the show, it is sad. And I don't know what the show wants to do with Mona. And it feels almost a little, you know, exploitive of this character. And the chemistry between her and, I hadn't really thought about it that way until you brought it up. Because she is so interesting and the chemistry between her and Allie is so good. But it's like, yeah, I mean, this is like a really just like deeply troubled character. And there's no way to see that character as like having like a sexy murdering good time.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause that's not who she is.
Well, that's maybe like, and also it's like, obviously the Allison is a deeply troubled character. She's, you know, despite whatever she learned, throughout her formative years, she's just going right back into it. And you know, I don't want I want troubled, broken characters because that makes for good drama. But after what happened in Pretty Little Liars when it ended, and what continues to happen where we're supposed to like feel great about Hannah and Caleb having a baby, or you know, Spencer and Toby eloping, or I don't know, Arya and Ezra assumingly having a great life together.
And they all get to move on off camera as these characters are trapped in like a new drama.
Well, right. That's the thing, is like, is this show gonna, are we just going to basically relive these traumatic cycles through new characters? Because again, like these three new characters are just friggin' mirrors of the Liars. Or are we going to actually have a TV show that is truly a sequel, in the best way, in which it like it continues the narrative arc of especially Allie and Mona, where do we get to see them functionally deal with these deep emotional scars that both of them have, or in the case of Mona, this very prevalent mental illness that she's dealing with? Do we get to see them like deal with it, or is all this going to be exploited for drama? In the pulpiest potboiler type of way.
I think probably the latter. Yeah. Yeah. You know, which is fine. We'll be back next week. But I did think when we finished this episode, I was like, that was a fun episode. I had a good time watching mm-hmm. that. And the more we've discussed it, the more I'm like, oh man, we really uncovered a lot of issues that we had with this TV show today.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know. I feel like the fact that, you know, the fact that this is a continuation of the last season of PLL, I feel like I can't say Pretty Little Liars or PLL without just sort of like blurring it together. Like Pretty Little Liars, PLL.
PLL, go man.
So maybe the listeners at home are used to that by now, but maybe that's why like it feels like such a continuation that I feel like I'm just going back into the same old mold of like picking it to pieces. But maybe the other side of it is that like, this is what the show is. This is like The Perfectionist starts as what Pretty Little Liars became.
Right.
And so this is the universe. This is the show now. Either like it or you don't, but this is what it is. And, I mean, I'm still on board. I'm going to watch every week, but, I feel like the problems that plagued us in the end of PLL was of PLL are the problems that continue to plague us now.
No, you're right. I mean, I think it is pretty clear, even just from these first two episodes, that it is not going to solve any of the problems that we had with the show previously, and it has introduced new things, and or it's introduced elements that are fun, and it has changed the tone, I think, a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot to like about it. But I mean, yeah, if we are watching it sort of expecting it to go into, you know, real depth about what's going on with Mona and with Allie, I mean, I don't know if we, certainly I don't think we've seen that yet.
No.
And, you know, it's, again, it's an issue because you sort of have two shows happening at the same time.
Yeah.
You have the new characters who need more space to become empathetic. And then you have the two characters who we really care about who aren't given enough space to really be as interesting or be as rich as we want them to be. So I think we need to see more episodes, but certainly this one was just extremely silly, and we have to see where the ship steers from here.
I mean, I wonder if they're willing to explore that sort of the time, like the missing moments, or at least dramatic moments in Allie's and Mona's lives. You know, like, are we going to see? I mean, assuming we're never going to see any of the actual liars on the TV show, are we going to get a better idea of what happened between Allie and Emily? Are we going to get a better idea of what happened to Mona and how she ended up in Oregon? I don't know. I mean, I feel like the show wants to move on, while at the same time it wants to give audiences enough to, like, basically shut up and stop asking. It seems, I mean, maybe it does want it both ways. It wants you to move on from PLL and not dwell on all the missing information that you have, but it wants you also to maintain that love that you have and that affection that you have by sort of just saying, like, well, this is basically the same kind of show, only there are new characters to love here and, you know, new drama to mine.
Yeah.
I don't know.
On that note, thank you for listening to our podcast. I am intrigued to see what happens next week, and if only to see, like, how many new weird plot things get introduced that just will exist for the show to sort of loop around, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, what level of silliness can we get to in this show, which will be interesting to see.
Yeah. Will Dylan become first chair of the Seattle Symphony Orchestra? Will Ava see her dad again? Will Caitlin have an open relationship with Eddie Redmayne? I don't know. Find out next week. Or not. Who knows?
Well, we'll be here next week. And if you like this podcast and are already disillusioned feelings, you can give us 5 stars on iTunes and tell your friends. And we got a whole bunch of downloads this week, which was great because, you know, we were coming off of a very long podcast hiatus. So we're happy that you're still hanging out with us. And if you made it this far into the episode, we have all these stats on Apple right now.
Yeah, our stats say that you have not made it this far.
Yeah, it says the average is like 37 minutes of our hour plus of podcasting. So if you're still here, that's great. And we'll try and keep it a little more interesting next week, and we'll see if we can get that from 37 out to 38 minutes and just keep pushing it along.
Let's pause briefly for the bumper to our fake beer sponsors.
Sponsors, what are you having tonight, Tom?
This week's fake beer sponsor is Level Beer, Portland's own Level Brewing. I am drinking their one of their flagship beers, the Game On IPA. They have a tasting room / brew pub area with lots of food carts very close to my house. I'm so glad that they're there. I love Level Brewing. They have new beers constantly. They are getting a lot of attention, and I wish them all the best. I really like their beers a lot, and I'm so glad that they are one of the better places to go by my house, which is on the outskirts of Portland by the airport, and so there's not a whole lot around there.
And they're called Level Beer because they have a video game theme, and this particular
Mario.
It's Super Mario, yeah. the very first Super Mario, very pixelated and 8-bit.
Yes, they have a video game theme. You know, they have Level On or Level Up, Game On, but they also have kind of just whatever theme strikes their fancy. They had a beer. They still have a beer. It's pretty popular. It's their hazy IPA. It's called Stable Genius. It's a beer making fun of Donald Trump. And it's actually very good. They just brewed an American style lager called It's Mueller Time, which can be disappointing.
We're going to have to pour those down the sink, unfortunately. I mean, who can say? We have another PLL mystery. No one's actually read this Mueller report, right, so we don't know. I know what's a keeping. Swore you never tell. Okay, I never saw that show.
Oh, it's Scandal is a deliciously scandalous and quite pulpy TV show about the presidency.
Hmm.
It is extremely unrealistic, but it's also, you know, it's just like, you know, it's like, ooh, mystery and murder in the White House. Ooh. If you haven't seen Scandal, I've only seen maybe the first, I don't know, two seasons of it. There's like five seasons now. If you like that Shondaverse stuff, go watch it. Scandal. It's on probably Netflix or Hulu.
Or yeah, it's on one of them.
Just like PLL. So that's probably it for this week. We should probably get in the habit of thanking people. Thanking Phil Nelson for our theme songs and music.
Thank you, Phil.
Thank you, Sarah Trahan, for our artwork. Our the little square icon that you see when you download
you're seeing it on your phone right now.
Exactly. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher probably, and maybe Spotify.
We're gonna try and get on Spotify.
But the best thing you can do is to go on iTunes and rate us and give us a review. I don't know, charts matter. You know, the world in this world of content and our freelance-based economy, feedback is essential and very important for our success. And so if you'd like to see us succeed, you should say good things about us. And you should find us on Twitter at PLGM Podcast. I think that's the only place you can find. Where, is that it?
That's pretty good.
Yeah. and if you go and find us on Twitter, then you can also find our Twitter handles there and connect with us on the social media and come back next week. We now have press access because apparently we've convinced ABC and Disney that this is a press endeavor and therefore legitimate. We can get our shit together enough beforehand to watch the TV show early because we do have access to it.
And we'll drop these babies out as soon as the episode ends.
Right. So you could actually. So if you're on the East Coast, and you're watching this at what time does Perfectionist air?
I don't know, like 1 p.m. Who knows what time it is over there?
Yeah.
Do they even have clocks?
Like 6 hours before us. Yeah. The podcast will hopefully show up at the exact same time that this show starts airing, And so you can watch along. You know what would be really fun is if one of these days we did like a commentary
track. Like a commentary track. That's a good idea.
You know what? If we actually had time enough, we could maybe start a Patreon, and that'd be like a great Patreon thing. But Patreon requires that you give us money to give you extra content. And I don't think
one thing at a time, Tom.
Because that would also require us watching more, probably like going back. I mean, the most obvious thing that we could do is to have a Patreon where the bonus episodes are us going back and covering PLL episodes that we never covered.
Oh, I'm not doing that.
Which is just like so much fucking work.
That's not going to happen. It's fine. We said everything. We've said everything we need to say about the show, and now we continue to say more things about it because it is still on TV. Because we're watching Pretty Little Liars season 8 right now.
Man, we are so innocent. The people that we were when we started this whole podcast.
Oh man.
We're now 80. I don't know if we mentioned this, but this is the 80th episode of our podcast.
It is.
The second episode of season 2. So-called season 2.
Well, if this show gets out to 2 seasons, then we can hit 100 episodes and then we can retire again.
I think maybe one of the things that we can say that we learned from our set visit is that we can all positively look forward to, not positively as in guaranteed, but positively as in not negatively, look forward to a second season, because I think that this show is probably going to do pretty well. Right? I don't know. We should maybe
by what metric are we? I don't know. I don't know what's going on anymore.
What we were told by people on set.
Okay. Well,
one person
okay.
on set.
We don't know what's going to happen, if there's going to be another
season. Yeah, some people on Twitter have been taking what we said a little too accurately. Like, for example, someone on Twitter said that we apparently said that Allie and Emily are broken up. We never said that Allie and Emily are broken up. As far as we're concerned, they might as well be broken up because Allie fucking left Emily on the East Coast. Granted, the show has not said they are broken up, but...
Yeah, we were inferring. We know a couple of things about something that will happen in a future episode, but it not anything that would be that interesting right now. And
no. It's not like we were given scripts or anything for the show.
We were not really given any real spoilers.
They were keeping it pretty under wraps. Like they have this, they have spoilers, spoiler prevention fine-tuned. In this business.
And we wouldn't do that anyway. But we don't actually know anything super... We know like one or two things which are not super interesting at this point in watching the show.
Right.
And when we get to that point in the show and it's revealed, we'll say... excuse me. We'll say, ooh, we knew about that one thing.
Yeah.
But anyway...
We'll point out the few scenes that we watched being filmed.
Yes, the literally 3 minutes of show that we saw in our day, because this is a tough business and it takes all day to shoot, you know, 5-10 minutes of screenplay. Anyway, folks, until next week, I brought pie, bitches.